Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined as always by the Marcus Brutus to my Julius Caesar, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So, Johnny Peralta, admitted PED user, just signed a four-year, approximately $53 million contract. That's according to, who was it?
John Heyman.
John Heyman. Was that on Twitter?
Yes, it was.
On the Twitter box. So Johnny Peralta just signed a huge four-year, $53 million contract with the St. Louis Cardinals. And what I've learned from this, if I've learned anything, it's that cheating, it does pay off in the end. Jason, what's your take on Johnny Peralta signing that four-year, $53 million contract?
My take is that the Cardinals always get thrown out there as such an expertly run organization. They will regret this contract.
Oh, spoken like a true Indians fan.
Yeah, spoken like someone that watched Johnny Peralta barrel into a young Esdrubal Cabrera and break Cabrera's arm as he clumsily went for a ground ball.
We should mention they were on the same team at the time of the collision.
Yeah, that was back in the days when Cabrera played second.
Yeah.
To make room for Johnny Peralta.
Yeah, I don't know. I know you like to rag on Johnny Peralta and how awful he is on defense. We were actually talking about this earlier. The last two seasons, he's been all right defensively. He hasn't been a defensive liability.
He's awful.
He's awful. You don't care what D-War says.
Any defensive metric that pegs him as anything but awful is unusable from this point forward.
I am tweeting Ben Jedlovic this immediately after the podcast.
Go for it. And I submit to you that Johnny Peralta's defense the last few years cannot be accurately judged since he's standing next to Miguel Cabrera.
Touche. Nice way to close out that segment.
Ha!
Well, on today's show, we're going to be talking baseball in Pittsburgh. We're going to be talking baseball in Cleveland. It's just the two of us, so we have the microphones to ourselves today. Let's get started by talking about the Pittsburgh Pirates and their somewhat busy offseason, actually. I've been kind of surprised about all the moves and everything that's been going on this offseason already. It's been kind of active. But let's kick it off first by mentioning what everybody kind of assumed was going to happen upon the conclusion of the season, which was that Garrett Jones was DFA'd, along with Kyle McPherson, I should mention.
Your boy.
My homeboy Kyle McPherson, may his shoulder rest in peace. But I think the difference between Garrett Jones and Kyle McPherson is obviously, you know, Garrett Jones was entering his third year of arbitration after making $4.5 million last year, and depending on where you looked, the general consensus was Garrett Jones was going to be making in the ballpark of $5 million, you know, various places have him $5.2 million, $5.3 million, whatever. And the Pirates just can't afford to have a platoon bat, you know, who hits 15, you know, home runs off right-handed pitchers sitting on their bench. It doesn't make sense.
Well, and they really can't afford it if he's only hitting .240 while he's doing it.
Right.
He's hitting like 290 and hitting 15 home runs.
That's a little different story.
It becomes a lot more useful, but I mean, guys who hit 240 and have power are lying all around the free agent pool most of the season.
Well, and I think too, the big difference is kind of like you said, when you have a platoon guy who's not hitting his platoon splits well,
right?
You know, he's not hitting lefties at all, and he's not hitting righties very well. That's not a very useful player.
Yeah.
So I had somebody ask me because, you know, I brought it up to one of my friends that, hey, you know, Garrett Jones was DFA'd. And they said, well, how does DFAing work? Like, what is DFAing? And I don't know how comfortable you are with explaining that. I had to jot down my notes to make sure that I had everything correct with the DFAing.
Well, I believe when they designate someone for assignment, they're clearing a spot on their 40-man roster.
Exactly, yeah. When you're DFA'd, that means that they're trying to clear a 40-man roster spot. So when you're DFA'd, you're immediately removed from the team's 40-man roster. Now, depending on your service time...
Right.
various things can happen after you're DFA'd.
That's right. It's confusing, yeah. Well, first of all, no matter your service time, they have 10 days from the date of designation to do whatever it is, whatever outcome is required based on your service time. There's a 10-day window, right?
Exactly. So if you're DFA'd, they have 10 days to return you back to the 40-man roster after you've been designated. Or they can make one of a couple different moves. You can place the plan waivers, and that can only be done within the first 7 days after being placed on the designated list. They can trade you, so they can work out a trade. They can release you, or you can be outrighted from the 40-man roster to the minor leagues.
Right, so then if you were to remain on that roster and they wanted to call you up during the season, they would have to remove someone from the 40-man to put you back on the 40-man in order to put you on their active 25-man roster.
Precisely. What a tangled web we weave.
And those waivers we mentioned, the first one you said, place the player on waivers.
Yes.
Those would be irrevocable waivers.
Yes. Is that how you pronounce that word?
Yes.
Irrevocable? I always say irrevocable.
Well, like, I don't know. Whatever. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Dictionary.com at some time. I don't know. They got the little pronunciation button there.
Yeah.
But, so, like, the Indians DFA'd Cord Phelps, and he was claimed by the Orioles. So he's on the Orioles now. It's not like during the waiver trade period in August where you can put in a waiver claim and then revoke it.
And pull someone back, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's just the long and short of DFAing. But basically, from the period of time that you're designated, they have 10 days to try and figure out what they're going to do with you.
Right, and I believe that some players, based on their service time, can refuse to be outrighted to the minor leagues.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah.
Some of the older, more veteran players, I don't think Garrett Jones would fall into that, but
usually, he definitely wouldn't.
Usually it's like older relievers and stuff that have been through many, many options and roster transactions in their lives.
You're Mike Myers kind of reliever.
Yeah, right. And so they say, no, I'm not going to the minors. I'm a free agent.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, what happens with Garrett Jones and Kyle MacPherson. I don't think Garrett Jones doesn't really seem like a fit with the Pirates in the direction that their roster's going, even if they do, get him for a more reasonable price. I just don't see what they're going to do with him.
I think Garrett Jones, though, will probably get a major league deal somewhere.
Yes, I think somebody will sign him. I definitely.
And I think Kyle MacPherson probably has a good chance to stay with the Pirates.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with him rehabbing, I don't.
Those are the kind of guys that, in the broad scheme of Major League Baseball's universe of players, outside of your own team, don't carry any recognition, really.
Right, exactly. Yeah. We used to have discussions about this all the time, my buddies and I, who there was a period of time where Garrett Jones was once the best player on the Pirates.
Yeah.
And you would talk to other people who are fans of other teams, and they'd be like, who's Garrett Jones?
Right. And like every team, all 30 teams probably has two or three Kyle MacPhersons on their own roster right now.
Right.
So I don't think anybody's going to be snapping him up. And there was kind of speaking of DFAing, there was a conversation some Indians fans were having on Twitter about whether or not Cord Phelps was going to be the Russ Kanzler of this offseason.
Yeah.
Just because he's out of options and he's struggled in the limited major league experience he's got. So it's like if the Orioles sign someone, who do you think they're going to DFA to make room?
Precisely.
Cord Phelps. So it's a long off season. Just because someone is DFA'd and claimed this early doesn't mean that that's where they're going to stay.
Right. Well, and that's the tricky thing when you're picking up these guys and adding them to your 40-man rosters. you kind of have to be in a bad position, or I shouldn't say a bad position, but in a position where you've got some gaping holes on your 40-man roster to be picking up guys like this.
Right.
You know, at this period of the season.
Now, what about your one of your top prospects? I think he was ranked 12th by Jonathan Mayo. I don't know what you had him ranked, but Alex Dickerson got traded this week.
Oh, shot through the heart.
Oh!
And I tell you, and that was my initial reaction. I feel like that's my initial reaction, though, from being a Pirates fan for too long. So I had to take a minute and just objectively sit back and just look at this trade and try not to think of the last 20 years of this organization and just remind myself there is a man in charge who has an idea of what he's doing. And so, you know, initially I think it was more the shock of Alex Dickerson seemed like a serviceable piece, a serviceable component in our farm system, you know, a little like first base, right field, lefty with some power, who just won the Eastern League Rookie of the Year. You know, I'd just seen him like coming through
right.
Erie and out with the Altoona curve this season. But once I looked back and I figured out, and I saw the pieces and kind of figured out how the pieces were going to fit into next season, it made sense. You know, the Pirates traded Dickerson and they received in return relief pitcher Miles Mikolas. I believe that is how his, I'm assuming, Grecian last name is pronounced.
I'm assuming that's how his countrymen would pronounce his name, yes.
He must be from the same town that Jesse Katsopoulos is from. So Mikolas, he's a relief pitcher, or he was a relief pitcher for the Padres. Over his last two seasons, so between 2012 and 2013, he's thrown 34 major league innings. He's logged 24 strikeouts. He has an ERA plus of 107, so, you know, somewhat decent numbers. You know, he doesn't really have a big enough sample size to really take anything and, you know, extrapolate it from. Apparently, he was a high leverage relief pitcher in the Padres system. He'd racked up some saves in the PCL. So he's going to fit well, and Neil Huntington's already said, you know, if he's not with us on the opening day roster, he's going to have a chance to be with us. So they received another relief pitcher to add to their stable of arms in their bullpen. They also received outfielder, and get this, this is like a just an awesomeness of names that we've received in this trade. The names alone were worth the trade, I think. We also received a player named Jaff Decker. Jaff, J-A-F-F, Jaff.
I'm sorry, these names scream washout.
Miles, you can't imagine having a Miles Mikolas jersey, and wearing a Jaff Decker jersey to PNC Park. So
I'm sorry, I don't get the trade. I don't get it.
To me, it looks like you're looking at a guy that's 2 years away in Dickerson. You know, Dickerson's not coming up next year ready to play. You're probably waiting at least until the following season before he's ready to play. My guess is they look at the holes in Dickerson's game, which the holes are there, you know, and we saw that pretty apparently when he came through Erie with Altoona. He's got a long swing, and he's got some big holes in his swing, too.
He does. To me, this is what the trade is. They traded high upside, low floor for two guys with medium upside, medium floor.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what it is. Or I guess I kind of framed it in a different context, but somewhat similar in that I think they traded one player who could help them out in the long-term future for two players who could potentially help them out now.
Maybe. I don't have much faith in these two. I really don't. I don't know them that well. But this Mikolas character, everything I read, his fastball's just pretty much straight, which, I mean, that's gonna catch up to him in the major leagues. I mean, you can see that with Danny Salazar, who throws 100 and his fastball's straight, and that caught up to him.
Right.
And as far as Jaff,
Jaff, our good friend Jaffy.
Our good friend Jaff. Do you really think that he's going to solve your outfield problem, Jaff?
No, I mean, I have a hard time believing anybody with the name Jaff is going to succeed.
That's what I'm saying.
I feel like society won't let it happen.
I mean, I don't know. That's probably a horrible reason to give, but
no, it's not. No.
I mean, to me, this is my point, I guess. If someone's going to solve the Pirates' right field problem this year, it's going to be Gregory Polanco. And to me, I think that I'd rather have a shot of another guy with high upside solving it next year or the year after in Dickerson than to settle with Jaff Decker and Miles Mikolas.
Miles Mikolas. I got to think of a good Grecian meme that I can make up for Miles Mikolas. I'm going to be working on that the next couple days. It's
Joff
coming.
And Miles Mikolas.
Joff and Miles. But you know what? I will say in Decker's defense, you know, he has a high on base percentage track record in the minor leagues. From the time that he was 18 through this past season when he was 23, he's compiled a 402 on base percentage across six seasons, and that's 2,282 plate appearances.
I hope it works out for you.
I hope it does too. I think, to me, it's just one of those trades. I think in the end, 5 years from now, we're going to be looking at this and going, yeah, it was a trade. Like, I don't think Alex Dickerson's going to turn into a 30 home run monster for the San Diego Padres. And I don't think Jaff Decker or Miles Mikolas are going to end up being the, you know, the next Dennis Eckersley and
I agree.
And whoever you want to compare Jaff Decker to. But you know, they could be contributing pieces that help this year, I guess is my whole thing.
Here's the thing. Jonathan Mayo actually has updated his top 20 prospects from each team to reflect this blockbuster. And
it's such oozing sarcasm.
I believe that Dickerson is like 11th or something with the Padres, so he moved up like one. No, I think maybe he's in the single digits. Point is, he moved up by getting traded to a weaker farm system.
Right.
Which doesn't surprise me. There is now, from what I can tell, you know, not having the top 20 from Jonathan Mayo memorized for the Pirates like you may, it seems like he just kind of took Dickerson out and bumped everyone up a slot, because now at number 20, there's a guy who they don't even have his picture.
he's TBD.
So my point, I guess, is just, you know, and I don't know what it even means, but Mayo's not even putting Jaff in his top 20. And, of course, some of that's just pedigree, you know?
Right.
It doesn't really mean anything. I mean, every year there's guys like Danny Salazar who aren't ranked very well and then have an impact. But I guess that would be the eye test in this case. And we'll see what Jaff and Miles contribute, I guess. They're going to get a chance because the Pirates need outfielders and relievers always get a chance. So.
Right, right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And I'm going to start taking a look at their scouting reports now that we know they're going to be on our roster, just to kind of see the kind of stuff they have to give us an idea of what types of things to look for in the spring. So moving on from that blockbuster of a trade, as you would kindly refer to it, some more exciting news. Andrew Lambeau has been trying out first base in the Venezuelan Winter League. So what that means for Pittsburgh is, I think, and this kind of plays into the whole Garrett Jones DFAing, I think what Pittsburgh is going to end up doing, or what they would ideally like to do, is have a platoon mate for Gabby Sanchez in Andrew Lambeau, you know, say so long and farewell to Garrett Jones, and try and roll that lineup out there. Not necessarily taking care of their problem at first base, but trying to at least stop gap the problem at first base. for this season. You know, if maybe they go out and maybe they make a huge splash in free agency and maybe they get the big Mike Napoli free agent, or, you know, even a lesser name like James Loney to fill that first base spot. And maybe that's a moot point with Andrew Lambeau at first. But I think it just goes to show kind of how they're starting to look at how flexible they need some of their players to be going into next season. So Lambeau could be trying on that first baseman's mitt in the spring.
I mean, here's my – I'm going to be with Mr. Negative today, I guess.
You really are, because you know what? You're kind of upset that they traded Alex Dickerson, and now you're upset that they're moving Andrew Lambeau to first. What do you want from them, Jason?
Well, you know, and I think we're going to get into this argument later, but you always, you know, argue that the Pirates are they need to be stockpiling these prospects and building for the future. And to me, the Dickerson trade is settling. It's doubling down on mediocrity. We don't know if Alex Dickerson's going to pan out, so let's get two guys who will never be as good, and maybe together they'll be as good as Alex Dickerson could have been.
It's so sad when you say it that way. That hurts my soul, Jason.
It's the Scott Boras. It's the anti Scott Boras draft strategy.
Yeah, like draft safely so we don't have to end up paying that ridiculous.
No, but what it's saying, do you see what I mean though? It's
right.
We don't want to take the chance this guy might not work out. So let's get two guys who will work out but might not amount to much.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah, it's hedging your bets.
I watched the Indians do this for years. And that's how you get Aaron Cunningham. It's just I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
I would like it less if Pittsburgh didn't have the farm system that they had. You know, like Dickerson for me, I had Dickerson. He was my 15th ranked prospect at the beginning of the year. And going into next season, I probably would have bumped him up the list. He still probably would have been a fringy top 10, though, in Pittsburgh, even after having the phenomenal season he had and winning Eastern League Rookie of the Year. There's just too much talent ahead of him, and they brought too much talent in, you know, through the draft this season even.
Well, yeah, and I get that, you know, that in a deep system. And see, that's the point. When he gets traded to the Padres, like I believe he actually moved into the single digits in their farm system rankings. And then you get two guys who don't crack the top 20.
Right. But are closer to major league ready. Yeah. Yeah, it's quite the tangled web, but I tell you, I'm trying this new outlook on life that I haven't had the last 20 years, and it's trusting the general manager. So we're gonna trust Neil Huntington, and we're gonna trust his expertise.
I don't like it.
Well, you old curmudgeoned bag, you. deal with it. So
I'll try. It'll be easier.
Yeah. So Andrew Lambeau trying out first base in the Venezuelan Winter League. I don't know how we got back to Jaff Dacker.
I don't know either. But I think it started because I said I have no faith in Andrew Lambeau.
That could be it. That's just being a negative Nancy over there with everything.
Here's my deal with Andrew Lambeau. Is he gonna cost less than Garrett Jones? Oh yeah, big time. He's gonna cost like $800,000 probably.
Right.
But can he hit 240 with 15 home runs?
Could Andrew Lambeau do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Andrew Lambeau could.
Could he? Because he's never hit like home runs like he hit last year. Like that's the complete outlier in his whole career.
Yeah. I mean, if he had had a scouting report that said he was like a weak hitting middle infield type, and then all of a sudden he did that, I'd be somewhat suspicious. But like his pedigree, even before he came over, in that deal with the Dodgers was, you know, this guy could develop into a power hitter someday. And I mean, you see that happen with players. Sometimes it just takes longer for them to develop. Now, I don't know that I necessarily buy into Andrew Lambeau being a 32 home run, caliber player, but could he be a guy who hits 15 home runs and 230 in a platoon situation that favors him, I absolutely think he could do that. But I mean, his minor league track record is such that I would think that he could do that. You know, he's got a couple seasons with double-digit home runs. You know, granted, most of them were a few years removed from this past season, but it's not anything ridiculous when you go and start looking at his slugging percentage and kind of putting together a complete picture like that. It's not like he was completely void of power when he wasn't hitting, when he wasn't hitting home runs in Double A Chattanooga. I mean, he still had 39 doubles. I think he has the capability of hitting 15 home runs with a 230 batting average.
But if he's hitting 15 home runs in a platoon, we're talking about him hitting 15 home runs over 250 plate appearances.
Right, right. And that's only facing the pitchers that favor him, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you're not going to overexpose him just like you didn't Garrett Jones. And you saw last year, that worked to Garrett Jones' benefit. You know, this year, I'm guessing pitchers probably started to figure out how to adjust to Garrett Jones, even though the platoons kind of favored him and figured out ways to get him out a lot easier than they did last year.
Here's my point, and then I'll stop hating on it. Andrew Rambo. All
right. Go ahead, just lay it on a little bit thicker, Jason.
So we all know he had 32 home runs last year, right? We all know that. The last time he hit 15 home runs or more in a season was when he hit 15 in 2008 with the Dodgers single A club, and it took him 518 plate appearances.
Long, long, awkward pause. I get it.
I won.
You look at his slugging percentage, and like I said, I mean, in 2012, he slugged 504. I don't know. I mean, I think he has the capability to hit. I mean, it's not like I'm saying he can hit 30 home runs. I think he could be a Garrett Jones equivalent.
I think he's back in the minors by Labor Day.
We might have to put a friendly wager on this. We might have to put a friendly wager on this. We'll work that out off the air, though.
Well, if we're going to put a wager, I might up it past Labor Day. But
All right.
Definitely by the All-Star break.
So let's move on to some more positive things. How about that? I know you'll universally agree on. Gregory Polanco, who's now considered by many to be the top Pirates prospect. Shortstop Alan Hansen. Left-hander Jolie Rodriguez and right-hander Casey Sadler all received spots on the 40-man roster recently to protect them from the Rule 5 draft, and that effectively filled up the 40-man roster at the time when they made that move. So it's looking like we're getting closer and closer to the point where we're going to be seeing two of the Pirates' top prospects left in their system in Polanco and Hansen, potentially even as early as this season. The word on Polanco is that kind of like with Garrett Cole last year, where they think that probably right around that time of the All-Star break, he could be filling a spot in the Pirates outfield if he's ready.
Well, that's something to get excited about.
Right? Yeah, I know. There you go. You cannot rain on this parade, can you?
Not today.
No poo-pooing on this parade. No poo-pooing on the Polanco parade. There's some alliteration for you. So
use that in a drop.
Yeah, poo-pooing on the Polanco parade. So that's again, positive, making progress. These are going to be some of the savvier things that you've seen this front office that maybe, you know, it's taken years to develop them, but now we're going to see why we've been suffering for a while. And we're building these players and we're holding on to them and we're not trading them away to get the Matt Morrises of the world.
Matt Morris.
Yeah, there's a shout out to one of my least favorite contracts ever. And then the last thing I guess I wanted to touch on with the Pirates was concerning free agent AJ Burnett. And it's looking more and more like Burnett is just going to be priced out of Pittsburgh with all these ridiculous contracts. It started off with the Tim Lincecum deal, and apparently San Francisco completely ignoring the last 3 years of Tim Lincecum's life. And then Dan Heron signed for like $10 million with the Dodgers. Is that who he signed with?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think he just signed with the Dodgers. Cool. So Dan Heron, who posted like a 4.67 ERA or something ridiculous like that, just signed a $10 million deal with the Dodgers. And AJ Burnett's sitting there like, come on, guys, you wouldn't even, you know, extend me a qualifying offer here. But Neil Huntington's been very blunt from the start. He said, hey, that, you know, that $14 million, that put us out of AJ's potential suitors from the start. Like, we just can't offer him that. And Neil Huntington, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's TV money.
Yeah, right. We need to get out of that contract with Root Sports and create our own YES Network in Pittsburgh.
Well, no, not that. But this offseason was the first time that teams got the first payout from the new TV deal.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you mean just the whole league, yeah.
So they all got like $20 million. Problem is, when you take, you know, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Angels, all the idiots, and tack $20 million onto the money they already have, it just, the contracts get even more outrageous than they would have been already.
Right, yeah, it just compounds the problem. And that's what Neil Huntington has basically said as much. And this is a direct quote, according to an article written by Tom Singer. But he said, General Manager Neil Huntington stated, the unfortunate reality of the market is, if he's into that, meaning the humongous contract, he's going to pitch somewhere else. We've got funds we would gladly allocate to AJ. If he or others want a market value deal, they'll sign elsewhere. It's not just Pittsburgh. There are other markets where different resources must be used as effectively as possible. There is money available, but the question is, how do we build around AJ? We've got some other soft spots to address, and where do we go there with the money that AJ may ultimately cost us? So,
afford to pay him that much at the age that he's at.
And it's the harsh reality of being the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, would you rather go have a 37-year-old AJ Burnett, or would you rather go out and sign a, you know, like a James Loney type first baseman that's going to potentially solve your first base problem over multiple years? I mean, that's a pretty easy answer. I was shocked that Neil Huntington was as blunt and straightforward as he was, though. I don't want to say it's like disrespectful to AJ Burnett, but I could see AJ Burnett like going on one of his little Twitter tirades saying like, oh, I'm not worth $14 million.
Get his tattoos all worked up.
Yeah. Get his dander up. So,
yeah, well, you know, and see, this is the problem. Like the Pirates, you know, they don't want to extend. If they had extended that qualifying offer to Burnett, that would have completely destroyed his market, because for a pitcher at that age level, people aren't going to want to sign him to long-term contracts. So to have to give him a short-term contract and give up a draft pick, nobody's going to want to do that. But so even if you say, oh, well, the $14 million's too much, say $8 or $10 million is the correct amount, you can't get a pitcher of a younger age on a contract like that because of the years that's required. Even if he would agree to that amount, you'd have to sign him for 5 years.
Right, right.
And then it's going to handicap you in a completely different but just as devastating way.
Yeah, it's tough being in Pittsburgh's situation when you're talking about the finances. I like how straightforward Neil Huntington is, though. You know, he's very realistic about how he communicates to the fans and the media, about the finances that he has available. I really like it. It's kind of refreshing to hear almost.
Well, and you know how my feeling, you know, although it often makes perfect logical, rational sense for a general manager to trade a player that is going to leave at the end of the season, when a general manager lets the player walk, he allows the player to be the bad guy.
Right.
You know, it's like we've talked about this a million times. When Mark Shapiro and the Indians organization let Jim Thome walk away after offering him the largest contract in team history, no one blamed the Indians for that. They blamed Jim Thome. But when Mark Shapiro traded Cliff Lee and CC Sabathia and Victor Martinez before their contracts expired, when they all basically, except for Martinez, said they weren't coming back, the Indians front office was the bad guy.
Right. Yeah, they were giving up.
Even though Cliff Lee essentially said, no way am I signing anything to stay in Cleveland. Forget about it. somehow right. Mark Shapiro became the bad guy in that.
Yeah.
So to me, you know, Neil Huntington's taking the right approach, you know, because you have to just say, like, listen, I can't afford to pay you that. If you won't stay here for this, well, I'll see you around.
Yeah, and I like it. I find it very refreshing. I like that attitude and that clear, concise communication. There's some more alliteration for you as well.
Oh, man. And more agreement.
I am on a roll tonight. Well, that's it coming from Pittsburgh. Jason, what do you have going on with the Tribe? Have they had an equally busy offseason?
There has been some happenings. Some of them are just as exciting as Alex Dickerson for Jaff Decker. But, you know, things got off to a bang when the Indians non-tendered Chris Perez, just basically kicked his sorry butt to the curb.
How sad did that make you on a scale of 1 to 10?
-5.
On the sad scale, that was a -5.
That did not make me sad at all. Not to see his contract go away or his ugly mug or his ERA. Then they did give the qualifying offer to Ubaldo, which was the 14 point whatever million we just were talking about with AJ Burnett. He declined that, so he's on the free agent market with the draft pick compensation attached to him.
Hey, I'm sorry to interrupt. Can I point out one of my favorite things to you, though, about baseball players' contracts? So when we're talking about like 14, I think it was $14.1 million.
So
the .1 on their contract is like twice what I make in a year.
Yeah.
I love that it's a .1 of their contract. It's a tenth.
It's not even a .1. It's a, I mean, if you put that into the actual value of the contract.
Yeah, right.
It's like, ugh.
It's the .1 on the end of their deal. That's the twice
on the end of the other $14 million
that they're making. So I'm sorry, carry on. That was just the thought I had.
Yeah, they did not give the qualifying offer to Scott Kazmir, so he's out there just free of any compensation.
Which was a smart move.
It was.
You would have to be out of your mind to give that qualifying offer to Scott Kazmir.
Right.
I think Kazmir, and we talked about this, I think, at the end of the season as well, but I believe Kazmir's probably worked his way into a multi-year deal, like a two-year deal, well, potentially.
I think he's like in a two-year $14 to $18 million kind of range.
Right, yeah.
Reportedly, the Indians don't want to sign him for 2 years, and he wants 2 years. That's the rub with Ubaldo, or with Kazmir, rather.
You know, just like any good relationship, though, Jason, it's all about compromise.
There you go. Well, we'll see. I don't know.
Spoken like a true man who just got engaged.
Oh, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
For the record, I did know about it beforehand. He didn't just tell me.
That was how I broke it to you.
That was how you weaseled a congratulations out of me on the podcast.
Yeah, I just want to have that on record for all eternity.
Yeah, right.
I'm gonna have my unborn children listen to this podcast.
Right. Then talking about how they didn't want to give 2 years to Scott Kazmir, Joe Smith, who was their other big free agent. Notice I'm not counting Matt Albers and Rich Hill as big free agents.
What?
Joe Smith, their other big free agent, wanted 3 years, and the Indians only wanted to give him 2, and he was able to find 3 years from the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim for 3 years and $15 million.
You know what? I'm going to start calling them the Lost Angeles Angels of Anaheim, because I feel like they have no idea what they're doing.
I mean, here's the thing about Joe Smith. I mean, I watched Joe Smith through all his arbitration years. I can't tell you how many years he pitched. I think it was like maybe 4 years in Cleveland. Could have been longer than that. The one thing I will give Joe Smith credit for, relievers are inherently volatile. Like 1 year, they're locked down. Next year, they couldn't get anybody out. I mean, we see this with Perez and Pestano. We see it with Mark Melanson, and I mean, you see it with everyone. 1 year they can't do anything, 1 year they're great. Joe Smith was a rock every year.
I mean, if you go look at his statistics are phenomenal. His ERA plus every year that he's been in the league. So he came up with the Mets in 2007.
Right.
His lowest ERA plus, which is adjusted to, which is ERA adjusted to the ballparks. The lowest ERA plus he's had is 104. So it's 104, which is still, you know, above the league average. Right. I mean, his ERA plus this season was 165. Yeah. That's adjusted to 100.
Yeah.
I mean, he puts up phenomenal numbers, but when you start comparing that to the rest of the market, you know, like we said, what is, how much is a relief pitcher worth when we're talking about wins? You know, wins above replacement this season, he had a great season, 1.8 wins. So you're paying $5 million in the hopes that he can replicate this season again. Yep. I don't know. That's a very ballsy 3-year commitment.
Right. I mean, I think the Indians were probably wise to want to limit it to 2, you know. I think if we're talking 2 and 10, I'm willing to go along with that just because of how empty the Indians bullpen is right now. But we're talking 3 and 15. That's too much, and I think the Angels can just take that contract and add him to the heap of money that is shipped out the door every Thursday night.
Into the sieve that is the front office of the Los Angeles Angels.
I mean, I don't understand where any of that money comes from, but
Jerry DePoto is supposed to be one of the smartest people in baseball. I don't understand. They're either he's completely fooled everybody and works for FedEx, or somebody else must just be making him make these decisions.
You know what my favorite Joe Smith story is?
What?
Is that I think it was maybe a couple of years into his career in Cleveland. So he wasn't just like a scrub, you know. But again, to your point, he's just a relief pitcher. He's not, you know, Nick Swisher or anything.
Right.
He's out at a bar, and I can't remember. I don't want to, you know, slander Joe Smith, but I believe there was an altercation at the bar. Let's just put it that way.
A disagreement of sorts.
There was a disagreement of sorts. And as the bouncer removed Joe Smith from the club.
I like where this story's going.
Joe Smith reportedly said to him over and over again, "Don't you know who I am? I pitch for the Cleveland Indians."
That's never a good thing to ask when you're a middle reliever.
And the guy was like, "No, I don't know who you are, kid. Get out of here."
His face could have been on a wanted poster and he'd have been more famous in Cleveland.
And at the time, he wasn't even the Joe Smith that we know now, you know.
Right. He was just the man with the most bland name in all of professional baseball.
He was the man with the goofy delivery. He wasn't even like the guy who's locked down the eighth inning for the last 3 years. It was just like some scrub, you know.
He was John Doe. That's what he should have been.
"Don't you know who I
am?" "Don't you know?" said the middle relief pitcher being thrown out of the bar.
"No, I don't know who you are.
I have no idea who you are, Joe Smith. If that is your real name,
yeah,
in fact."
Start looking at his ID like, "Yeah, right, kid, Joe Smith."
"Yeah, what do you think? I was born yesterday here, Joe?"
So anyways, the Indians have made one free agent splash, signing David Murphy from the Texas Rangers to a 2-year, $12 million contract with a club option for a third year. I really like this move. You despise this move.
I don't despise the move. I'm neutral on the move. I don't think, to me, it doesn't seem like a move that is typical of the Cleveland Indians front office recently.
As in a good move?
Right, yeah, okay. So they get David Murphy for the 2 years, the $12 million, and you look at David Murphy, and he's that kind of player who, over the course of the season, is going to contribute maybe 1 to 2 wins. I mean, you look at most of his seasons, and they're, you know, he's not receiving the full season's at-bats. You know, the most at-bats he's had in a season is 457. And that was last or 2012 with Texas. So, you know, he's one of those like part-time players kind of filling in. I mean, what do you like so much about the deal? I mean, even based on the open market value, if he produces on par with what he typically produces in the wins above replacement category, you're overpaying for wins.
Well, here's the thing. So he's left-handed. Okay, so he's the perfect complement to Ryan Rayburn in right field. And, you know, we know that last year they signed Rayburn to a two-year contract with a third-year option. So I'm going to assume that this is to platoon Rayburn and Murphy, and that either Stubbs or Michael Bourne is going to get traded at some point. Although Chris Antonetti was quoted in the Plain Dealer saying that he could see a scenario where Rayburn, Stubbs, and Murphy are all on the same team, you'll notice that he left Michael Bourne out of that equation. But anyways,
that's interesting.
I mean, well, it's like, of course you can see that scenario. I mean, I can see a scenario where they're all on the same team. It's called trading Michael Bourne or Michael Brantley for that matter.
Blasphemer.
Yeah. I wouldn't be in favor of that, but, you know, just saying. Anyways, here's my point. I think that the trade is actually real, or the signing's really similar to the Ryan Rayburn signing, where you're taking a guy who actually has a fairly solid career, not trajectory, but really solid career numbers. Like, generally, he always performs within a certain tolerance level. And after a really poor year, you're signing him to a contract that barely increases his salary. Like, last year for Texas, he was paid $5.77 million. So this year he's going to be paid $6 million. While he had a bad year last year, we all know how baseball works. You basically always get a raise no matter what you did last year.
Yeah, it's a union job, man.
Yeah. So basically, you're holding him steady at a salary rate because he had a horrible prior year. He's a career 275 hitter. Never in his life, he hit 220 last year. Never in his career, other than his rookie year in 2006, did he hit below 269. And he's played 8 seasons.
Now, you're not getting those, now, like I said, you're not getting those full seasons out of him. Most of the time, he's sharing his at-bats with somebody.
Well, you know, that's, I mean, yes and no. I mean, that's a little misleading in some ways. I mean, over his 6 prior years with Texas, he had over 440 at-bats every year.
He only cracked the 500 plate appearances once, though. And that was 2012, was the only time he's cracked the 521 plate, or the 500 plate appearances. That was the 521. Right. I mean, he's...
when he had an amazing year, batting 304 and a contributed 3.5 wins.
So, I mean, I think you just kind of have to understand, like, those numbers that you're getting, while, you know, it'd be great if he hit his, even if he hit his, for his career line, 275, you know, 337, 441, that's probably coming in less than a full season's worth of at-bats. And that's where you see that kind of reflected in his WAR as well. You know, his WAR in his best season, which was that 2012 season we keep referencing, was 3.5, which is great, but he's never even sniffed that in any other season in his career because he's not getting the plate appearances for it.
Well, in 2010, he had 2.8. So, I mean,
2.8. Yeah. I mean, he's still nearly a whole win away.
But the point is, I mean, you're acting like 275 isn't hitting 275 if you don't play every day. You're still hitting 275. That's how you make a great platoon. You pair him with someone that is the opposite. So you have 275 from Murphy, and you have a career, it's like 260 hitter in Rayburn. They each average about 15 home runs and 50 RBIs over those plate appearances. So you put them together. For $10 million, you've got a platoon that projects to hit 265, say, with 30 home runs and 90 RBIs.
And part of that platoon is making $6 million. What's the other part? What's Rayburn make?
I think he only makes, it's either like two or four. So, I mean, you're talking, it's $10 million total. Keep in mind that Nelson Cruz on the free agent market wants a four-year, $75 million contract.
Right, yeah.
So my point is, $10 million buying, say they don't even perform to that. Say it's 20 home runs and 70 RBIs, which I think we can all agree that Ryan Rayburn and David Murphy can combine to hit 20 home runs and bat 260.
I'll agree with that for the sake of this conversation. Carry on.
So for $10 million, where can you buy that on the free agent market? Drew Stubbs is going to cost $4 million to keep him through arbitration at least.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that is a somewhat valid point if you're looking to, I guess.
Somewhat valid.
If you're looking to marginally upgrade, I guess you could go with David Murphy for $6 million.
But what do you want them to do?
I mean, at that point, I would have probably rather they just spend another $2 million and get Marlon Byrd for 2 years.
No. I'm not nearly as high on Marlon Byrd as David Murphy.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think I would have been.
You're spoiled on Marlon Byrd because he had one amazing month.
We got that one win above replacement for him.
He will never recreate that ever again.
He won't. Man, the Phillies, what an awful organization.
I mean, you know he's never going to hit like that again.
No, he's not.
He's gonna be
40, oh, no.
He's going to be 40 years old when that contract's over.
He's so...
And he's in the National League. He has to play the outfield.
Right. You've got to put him out there. Oh, Lord. What a mess of an organization. No matter what we say about each other's organizations, they're never as bad as the Phillies.
Don't worry. They have Chase Utley and Ryan Howard. Oh, wait.
Ryan. They got to pull him out of the old folks' home at the start of spring training.
Yeah. Oh, wait. They have to. The Phillies, I think, should be applying for a discount for, like, the Centrum Silver that is in that clubhouse right now.
Oh, my Lord. What a disaster. What a disaster. Ruben Amaro just is. He's insane. He's insane. I'm surprised the ownership just tolerates the fact that he's like, we don't care about statistics. Anyway, the dude went to Stanford or something, didn't he?
I have no idea. I don't profess to know Ruben Amaro's educational background.
I'm going to go double check. I'm pretty sure he went to Stanford. Let me go check the Wikipedia for this.
Well, while you check that, one interesting thing, like I said, obviously the expectation is now that Drew Stubbs or Michael Bourne will get traded. Drew Stubbs, the date to keep in mind is December 2nd because that's the date that he would have to be non-tendered by, because I'm assuming at that point, you know, his arbitration hearing and everything, or his arbitration process begins.
Right.
So if he's not traded or released by December 2nd, then, you know, they're going to be locked into paying that salary unless, of course, they can trade him at a later date. Carlos Santana in the Winter League has been getting reps at third base, which you might all remember that that's the position that Carlos Santana actually started out playing in the Dodgers organization. So keep in mind, he did used to be a third baseman, although he hasn't played there since probably 2006, I'm going to guess. The thing about Carlos Santana is, of course, the more he shows that he is not really dependable as a catcher, and of course then compounded with the emergence of Yan Gomes, his kind of like positional limbo really makes it hard for the Indians to upgrade the infield. Because it's like, well, do you need a first baseman or do you need a DH? And that's right. Like, well, Swisher basically is saying, I don't really want to play the outfield. I mean, I will if I have to in a pinch, but I don't want to play out there all the time. Okay, so that's your first baseman. Santana becomes your DH. Gomes is your catcher. So now the only place you can really upgrade is third base, where you have this prospect in Lonnie Chisenhall that, personally, I feel needs at least a little bit more rope to either prove himself or, you know, you can't just write him off at this point.
You've been saying that, and you said that all through last season as well.
Right. So, you know, a lot of people are saying, what are the Indians going to do to fix up their infield? Well, what are they supposed to do? You know, and so I don't think they're really going to play Carlos Santana at third base all the time. But if he could play 20 or 25 games over there and see how it goes, that opens up a spot, you know, for a guy like a Jesus Aguilar to enter into this DH rotation, at, you know, this first base DH rotation. And, of course, the other plus is if he could play third, that would remove the big concern about DHing your backup catcher.
Yeah, that's a very valid point as well.
So I don't know. I mean, Swisher's obviously a better first baseman than Santana. There's no doubt in my mind about that. I can't imagine that Santana is going to be that great of a third baseman.
What would ever give you that idea?
So, I mean, I think really their infield just kind of is set the way it is, and they need to use the fact that they have a little bit of positional flexibility with Aviles and with Santana as their primary DH / backup catcher to enable them to carry a guy like Jesus Aguilar, Jose Ramirez, however they decide they want to go.
Yeah.
Since we were talking about the free agent market, you find anything out about Ruben Amaro there?
Yeah, he went to Stanford.
The Cardinals are weeping. Or I'm sorry, the Cardinal.
The Cardinal. Yeah, the Stanford Cardinal. Yeah. Stanford graduate in 1987. He should be smarter than that. Stanford education.
Hey, so speaking of smarter than that, should the Indians be smarter than signing Pirates cast-off Big Mike Zagurski?
Let me spin you a yarn about Mike Zagurski.
do tell.
It's not going to end well. That's the whole story.
Yeah,
it can be summed up in one sentence. I don't know. He's a guy. Yeah, that's what he's a guy who's had a baseball uniform on before.
And he throws left-handed.
So, and he's left-handed, yeah.
So he's going to get chances until he can't walk out to the mound anymore.
Yeah, what do I always say about lefties? If you're left-handed and breathing, you got a job somewhere.
Exactly. You know, we were talking about the free agent market. Just to kind of wrap things up, the Indians and possibly the Pirates, if they can't bring A.J. Burnett back, are in the market for starting pitching. The market, it's pretty grim, man. Like, if you're not willing to give $10 million to Danny Heron, like, you're relegated to the likes of Scott Kazmir. He'd probably be number one on the list. You could always go with Chris Capuano, Sean Markham, Jeff Niemann, Jake Westbrook.
Oh, Jake West, there's an oldie but a goodie.
I have a sneaking suspicion he might be wearing an Indians uniform before this offseason's over. Or if you want to go over the reclamation project route, Johan Santana.
Oh, interesting.
Now, I mean, seriously, we all have this kind of like belief in Mickey Callaway. I saw it on one of my favorite Indians blogs. It's called The Diatribe. They were referring to it now as the Tao of Mickey. But, I mean, you know, with all the success he's had with these guys, and the Indians love to go after those reclamation projects for pitching and try to make a buck, you know?
Yeah.
Johan Santana, man. Do you think it's worth it?
Go for it. Depending on what price you can get him for, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's totally dependent on price. I agree. And the relief pitching market is just as grim, really, because if you're going to stick with guys like Grant Balfour and Joaquin Benoit, you're going to pay some serious dough for not very much performance.
Yeah, well, Joe Smith just kind of screwed that market up.
Right. You could always roll the dice and go with Kevin Gregg or Brian Wilson, although the Tigers seem to be closing in on the beard. And then kind of in the lower levels, you have like the Jesse Crane, Scott Downs, the used to be good. Now I'm getting old market. Of that group, I wouldn't mind seeing Scott Downs in an Indians uniform.
By the way, when you refer to Jesse Crane, you have to refer to him as All-Star Jesse Crane.
No, I refuse. And
yeah, the market is definitely like it's bleak and expensive.
Yeah, it is.
If you just look at the top 50 free agents, to crack the top 50 free agents, you're paying a couple million dollars per a couple years. It's rough. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So you're talking about David Murphy at $6 million. It's not that bad.
I guess relative to everybody else, it's not. Still makes my skin crawl. If it were my team paying $6 million, I think I'd be a little more upset. Since it's Cleveland, I think I'm just neutral on it.
You were mad because they DFA'd Garrett Jones, who hit 240, but a guy who hit the same amount of home runs in most of his seasons and batted 30 to 40 points higher for $1 million. You wouldn't take him?
Wait. Hang on. Repeat this scenario to me.
Okay, so Garrett Jones got DFA'd because he hit 15 home runs and batted 240 and was going to make $5 million.
Right, which is entirely too much money for Garrett Jones.
Right. But okay. You're telling me that if Garrett Jones hit 15 home runs and hit 275 and wanted $6 million, that wouldn't be good?
I would not
be. Keep in mind, you don't have a first baseman.
Okay, very valid point there. Very valid point there. I don't know. That's a whole different. That's just a horse of a different color with Garrett Jones's platoon splits and all that. I don't know. That throws the monkey in the wrench. Would I want that from Garrett? If Garrett Jones hit 275 with 15 home runs, would I want to pay another $1 million to bring him back? Probably not. I'd still say that's probably too much for Garrett Jones. So if you're putting it in that context with Garrett Jones, I would say no. I don't think I'd want to pay that. Well, I think I'd probably let him walk.
You know what, then? Have fun with Andrew Lambo.
Oh, I'm going. Hey, don't. Have you seen my memes? My Andrew Lambo memes?
Unfortunately, I have.
They're the best.
Now, before we wrap this up, a friend of mine sent me this strange but interesting article on it's part of the SB Nation series of blogs. It's Royals Review. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know why he's on a Royals site, but anyways. He's
just hanging around the Royals, trolling the Royals fans.
Trolling the Royals blogs, scraping the bottom of the barrel. But anyways, they had kind of an interesting scenario. So they picked a fan of each team and said, okay, you're the general manager of your team. What are you going to do this winter? And they set like a payroll and everything.
Right.
The scenarios these people came up with were ridiculous.
That's probably why those people are not general managers.
But I'm going to read them to you anyways.
Okay.
All right.
Please do.
Let me start with the Indians. For some reason, this person, first of all, as you can imagine, when an average person becomes GM for a day, they have a penchant for the blockbuster.
Oh, it's so much easier when it's not your money.
Right. It's just like when you're like doing your franchise in Madden, like you don't really have to worry about in the future.
You don't care about money.
You don't care about that. So anyway, so for the Indians, non-tender Chris Perez, Frank Hermann, and Blake Wood. All right. I don't know what Frank Hermann did to anybody. I mean, he's just rehabbing. But anyways, then it gets crazy right off the bat. Trade Francisco Lindor, Tyler Naquin, Trevor Bauer, Yan Gomes, Drew Stubb, and Mike Aviles to the Marlins for Giancarlo Stanton and Jacob Turner.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, it gets better. It gets better. I actually don't mind this trade.
Traded. Who's left to trade?
Michael Bourne.
We forgot about Michael Bourne.
Traded Michael Bourne and $7 million to the Royals for Billy Butler.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Traded Court Phelps for Justin Smoke. I think that says a lot about Justin Smoke's point in his career.
He's hit a new low. He's hit a new low that the average Joe general manager just traded Justin Smoke.
Right. So now that the Indians have cleared, you know, those major cap commitments in Francisco Lindor and Tyler Naquin off the books, they're going to sign Ricky Nolasco to a 3-year, $33 million deal.
What is going on, Jason?
signed Johnny Peralta to a 3-year, $28 million deal. And then because they want the Indians to turn into the Indians of 2007, continue by signing Franklin Gutierrez for 2 years. Then they rounded out with Jabba Chamberlain, Scott Downs, Michael Young, Carlos Pena, Jason Giambi, Tony Sipp, and Kevin Gregg.
This is like what would happen in Bizarro World Baseball.
Now I'm going to read you the Pirates one.
Oh, okay. I don't know if I want to hear the Pirates one after that one, but all right, let's go.
Non-tendered Travis Snyder and Vin Mazzaro.
Okay, all right. So far, I'm okay with that.
Traded Jameson Taillon, Luis Heredia.
Okay, I don't like this trade already, but keep going.
Nick Kingham, Tyler Glasnow, and Clay Holmes.
Who is this person?
To the Brewers for Ryan Braun.
Yes! Oh, that's exactly what we needed.
Perfect!
Just mortgage our whole future for Ryan Braun not on steroids.
Wait, it gets better. Traded Starling Marte.
What the fuck? What?
To the Cardinals for Matt Adams, Carlos Martinez, Joe Kelly, Stephen Piscotty, and John Gast.
Someone find this guy and slap him in the mouth.
Then you're going to flip Joe Kelly to the Giants for Clayton Blackburn and Andrew Susak. Then you're going to sign Wilson Bedemy, Brett Myers, and Matt Thornton. And to cap it off, to put the cherry on top, you're going to sign David Murphy to a 2-year, $10 million contract.
Yes, there he was. The David Murphy signing that never was.
Keep in mind that you're signing David Murphy to replace Starling Marte.
Yeah, great move there. Great move. This guy's never heard of sending a franchise backwards, apparently. Holy jeez.
Yeah, so
my blood pressure's through the roof right now. If I were friends with these people, I would hate them all.
You can check that out at the SB Nation Winter Meeting Simulation Debriefing.
We need to post that link just so people can go there and harass these people. Go tell your buddy he needs to troll that page and harass some people.
He probably is.
Oh my god, I can't take that. My blood pressure hurts just thinking about that.
He's a Braves fan, and they had them trading Brandon Beachy for Jonathan Lucroy and Ricky Weeks, trading Evan Gattis for Mike Dunn and Avery Romero, trading Dan Ugla and Cody Martin for Brandon Nimmo, signing Tim Hudson to a contract that in this market would never exist. And signing Chris Young, Michael McHenry, Alexei Casilla, and Edison Volquez.
So signing Michael McHenry, I'm assuming that means that we don't have Michael McHenry back. That was too much for me, Jason. That got my dander up a little bit.
As you can imagine, it's hard to untangle the web of the transactions that occur.
The crushing blow to franchises that these fake general managers would deal.
Oh, man.
Yeah, there goes my dream of an organization ever holding a general manager for a day contest.
Yeah. You know what kind of damage could be done in a day?
Apparently a lot if you put those people in charge. I'd be nervous to sign a new bat boy to a deal.
I don't understand what the Indians GM, why he had such a deep affinity for 2007.
I don't know either.
Bringing back Johnny Peralta and Franklin Gutierrez.
And I love how David Murphy ended up on the Pirates in that fake GM deal.
Isn't that just perfect?
We need to end there with that. This is too long. It's devolved to this, Jason. Life makes no sense to me anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Can't even deal with it. Go troll those people. Alright, well, if you don't want to troll people, you can come to our website and leave us some comments. You know, we put those new Facebook things up there, no one's really using them yet. Hoping those things take off at some point. Facebook's all the rage. Get on there, leave us some comments on www.tsmbaseball.com. You can send us an email at tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on Twitter at tristatebb. And check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/TSMBaseball. So for General Manager Jason, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon. No poo-pooing on the Polanco Parade.